Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another day, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode is with Dave McLean of Django Django. And it's a great chat. We talk about all the usual stuff. We talk about some great bands. We talk a lot of hip-hop. We talk a lot of rave music. And we even talk about some early 90s indie rock. It's a cracking chat, this one. Before we get on with it, just a few thank yous. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this. And just quickly, thank you to you lot, because, you know, throughout the whole of 2020, you know, I've just been kind of pushing this podcast, recording, and it's been great. You know, it's been a wonderful distraction from the bananas world we're living in at the moment. And you lot have been so supportive, and you know, when you've seen it on the socials, you've given us the likes, the loves, the shares, the retweets and all stuff like that. And yeah, you're all subscribing away to the podcast, which is brilliant. So just a huge thank you to you lot for continuing to support the podcast. I really hope you're enjoying it. Okay, also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, when you finished my chat with Dave, then we talk about Public Enemy, we talk about the Spice Girls, we talk about James Lavelle. I should also say that all of these are previous guests, so if you're fans of those, go and have a rummage in the archives, because you'll have access to all of them chats, as well as chats. I think we mentioned Fatboy Slim as well. I've done an episode with Norman Cook, so go and give that a listen. And yeah, go and have a rummage, because there's 200 episodes, you know, featuring, oh gosh, acts as diverse as Chic, through to actors such as Maxine Peake. I'm not going to keep listing them, because there's bloody hundreds now. So just go and get stuck in and go and find one that you recognise and give it a listen. And then better still, just subscribe. And then they just pop up on your listening device. If you'd like to support the podcast as well, then I do a Patreon page. I have a Patreon, and what that means is every week I also put up 4 shows over there, radio-type shows where I play records and talk about them. Sometimes I have guests. I put up video episodes over there as well. And that costs about 80p a week. So I think you can sign up for like $5 for a month. And so if you know, are interested and you enjoy, you know, some wonderful creatives talking about their journey and the songs that have been important on it, then sign up to that. It really does help, because this is a labor of love, this podcast, and it's a glorious labor of love, I should add. But any support is very, very welcome and will be very, very much appreciated. Enough with a waffle. Just quickly, all of these things you can find out about at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Let's get on with it. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Dave McLean of Django Django.
It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we're recording. How you doing, Dave?
Good, thanks. Yes, good. Just kind of pottering about, getting ready for the day ahead still.
Well, what I'm interested in before we start talking records is how you found the last, you know, 7-8 months as both, you know, Dave the human being and the creative. You know, how have you found it?
really up and down. I think most people I talk to have the same thing where they're like really motivated for a while and getting loads done and then just hitting a wall and kind of like having to just hibernate for a bit. I mean, I'm talking about folk that are trying to make a record or, you know, be self-motivated. You just kind of seem to go through these waves of getting loads done and then can't be bothered and getting depressed about everything. And then, you know, just trying to ride it out. It's just been pretty mental and weirdly can't sort of remember life before this now.
It's kind of like, it's gone that far. It's true, isn't it? It's weird.
Yeah. So I just can't, you know, when I think about, because we're a band that just toured so much, played live so much the last 10 years. And it just feels surreal to remember festivals and stuff now. It's just like, I can't quite remember what that's like.
it's so weird. Like I chat to, you know, so many musicians on this podcast, and the resounding kind of opinion that seems to come across is like, how fucking good are them first gigs back gonna be? Like the feeling that the amount of like pent up energy and that the band are going to give the crowd and the same coming back is going to, I just think them first gigs when we're allowed to do it properly. Oh man.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I was talking to our sound engineer, he's up in Liverpool, and we were both like, yeah, we'll never complain about tour schedules again. You know, that kind of like, you know, that Twitter thing DJs complaining where they just post like folk moaning about the price of Pret sandwiches at airports and stuff. You know? Yeah. That's all gone now. Just be chuffed to be back to normal, really, whenever that comes, if it comes next year or whatever. But I mean, the upside of it, I guess, is more time in the studio and more writing and getting to make music, I guess. That's the, which I do love, you know, I love being in the studio. So that's the upside of it at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, for track one, I'm going to ask you the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro.
I think I said a Prince. Was it Prince, You Got the Look?
It was.
I don't know why that came to mind first, but it did just pop into my head. And I think it's that cool thing where it has the weird chords and then the drums kick in and then the weird chords and then the drums and bass kick in. And it's just so Prince to have a really, really poppy record and make it weird. You know, it's just that. I can imagine the record label going, chop that whole bit, you know.
Yeah.
And Prince going, no. That's, you know.
Well, Prince is a really good kind of example of to sort of kind of explain the next question I'm going to ask you. If you look at something like, which a lot of people have chosen actually on this podcast, which is Let's Go Crazy as an intro with the whole kind of speech at the beginning, which was a single. And so what I want to ask you, which is what I ask all musicians, is over the last sort of, you know, 10, 12 years of the band, how have you, in regards to intros, we've seen, like, you know, I think for, you know, for music now, radio would not play Let's Go Crazy on daytime radio now anymore because it doesn't cut to the chase quick enough, which is fucking criminal. But what I want to ask you is that over the last, or, you know, 10, 12 years, how have you, I mean, obviously the way that people listen to music is very, very different now, you know, to maybe how they did 12 years ago with, you know, with streaming services and things like that. Has that impacted on how you approach making music?
Definitely, yeah, because I could never be bothered going through the process of doing the radio edit. And you know what's going to happen.
It's as simple as that.
They're going to come back and go, the singing's got to start within 30 seconds, is it, or something? So if you have a track that you think is, it could be a single, then you kind of, well, we did the other thing recently where our first single, Spirals, had this really long, drawn out intro, and the whole thing was chopped. So when I hear it on the radio, it's got this nasty intro where it just cuts into the track. But, you know, yeah, you try. The single we've got at the moment, Glowing in the Dark's built to be on the radio, definitely, with no mucking around, which is good as well. You know, I think we try and do on an album, try and do a mixture of cutting to the chase and weird things. Yeah, Spotify now, they want you to be like really snappy and to the point. And I think that's just the way singles are going. They're just getting shorter and shorter. And I think in the next decade, we'll see singles being like a minute and a half, you know.
Yeah.
As opposed to the classic 3.5 minutes.
Sure.
It's just the way attention spans are going, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, for track two, I'm going to ask you the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Yeah, I think I chose the 3 Degrees cover of James Gang Collage.
You did.
And the album that's on, I remember getting it because it had a sample on it. I think Fatboy Slim had used the sample of some strings on it for Right Here, Right Now. And this is years and years ago, I remember buying it. Oh, and it has a track called Funk 49. I think it's called Funk 49 or something. That was a big sort of that funk record that DJs would play. So it's a great album, but it's got this track Collage, and I always liked it. But then the 3 Degrees version I heard, I think it came out in Buddha Records, but I heard it a lot later in life, you know, maybe like 10 or 15 years ago. And it instantly just was like, this is my favorite record. And yeah, I don't know what it is. Something sort of, I think the lyrics are sort of about the changes of season, and that's something that's always been a bit kind of melancholy for me, is autumn. That kind of, especially in Scotland, it's that kind of feeling of autumn coming in is quite like a melancholy kind of feeling in a good way. And I think that their version just kind of sums that up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not like a sad record, but it's something very emotive about it.
What if you had to pinpoint that emotion, what would it be?
I don't know. It's a weird sense of longing for something. It's a sense of kind of something new. And I guess that's the lyrics about the seasons, is kind of like, it's about changing and, you know, letting go of things in the past for new things. And that's something that we probably all feel when the seasons come back round again, you know.
Yeah.
Especially autumn into winter. And as I say, in Scotland, it's like it's quite a big, winters up there can be quite heavy. So, you know, you've got that, you've got a lot of time sort of hunkered down and, yeah, but also positives about that. So it's definitely a kind of, every time I hear it, I feel a bit like emotional. I don't know. Also, their vocals, you know, are just so beautiful, and the arrangement and everything, just quite epic. So,
whereabouts in Scotland was home growing up, Dave?
Dundee, sort of Fife, North Fife and Dundee.
Okay. And so was that where you went to school?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, Fife, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk school then, because for track three, I'm going to ask you to song remind you of your time at school.
Did I say Beck?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think this was kind of my last year at school. And all through school, I was really into rave music, I guess, dance music, techno, jungle. And then in about 95, 96, got really into hip hop. And then Beck came along with Mellow Gold and was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, it's the kind of weird, it's got hip hop sensibilities. I think it was produced by the Dust Brothers. So it's got that kind of Paul's Boutique collage sound.
It's got that element of sort of almost like slacker kind of lo-fi, yeah, as well. It's like so much good stuff on that record.
Yeah, mental, production wise just brilliant. And yeah, the slacker vibe and everything that when you're like 16 17 is very cool, you know. So yeah, me and my mates just kind of latched onto those Mellow Gold and Odelay, you know, just played them to death. And I remember we wanted to go, me and a couple of mates knew we wanted to go to art college. So we'd spend our last couple of years at school just in the art department all the time, just trying to soak up, you know, whatever we could in preparation for doing that. And they had a little tape player and we'd bring in mixtapes and stuff. And I remember Odelay especially, but when that came out, it was just on heavy rotation in the art department. I think Where It's At, I think I said, I had the 12-inch of Where It's At. I had two copies of it and it had a bonus beats bit track and I would like learn to hip hop DJ with this track, like looping, doing the beat juggling and stuff with the Where It's At, sample and the beat there. So I think when I hear Where It's At, it definitely takes me back to 96, 97, whenever that came out. And just that kind of, I guess there was so much good hip hop then as well. And
yeah.
And in the UK, it had all the great Mo Wax and Ninja Tune stuff that we listened to a lot. And still very fond of all that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you had a chance to catch the James Lavelle documentary, The Man from Mo Wax?
Haven't, no.
Oh, Dave. Give that a watch. That's spectacular. Yeah, really. But probably I would say that's probably my favourite music documentary ever. It's real kind of open book on Lavelle and Mo Wax. And it's a good watch, that. I highly recommend that.
I need to check that out, definitely, yeah.
But talking, you know, going back to school, like, how was that? Did you enjoy it?
I loved it, yeah. I really loved it. I mean, it was obviously I suppose in my head it's a bit like Grange Hill or something. It was just mental, or like Baggy Trousers by Madness, you know. That sort of sums it up, just nutty. But
yeah,
But good, you know, if you were getting bullied or in a shit mood 1 minute, you know, the coin flips and you're having a great laugh the next kind of thing. Like nothing really stuck around too long. So if it was crap, you know, 1 hour, it was great the next. And that went on like that all day for me. Just mad, you know, just hilarity as well. Just, you know, I don't think I've ever laughed so much as at school.
Did you know what you wanted to be?
I just wanted to do art and music, really. I didn't know how, but I just sort of honed in on that and ignored everything else, which the school didn't like very much. You know, they wanted rid of me a bit because I was just hanging around the art and music department all the time. And, you know, we formed bands and did like Stone Roses covers at school discos, and it was great.
Were you confident?
Within my little gang, yeah. But no, not within the school, no. Within my little gang, we'd had our own in-jokes and all that.
You touched on something earlier that I wanted to pick up on. You were saying about the bonus track on Where It's At 12, and, you know, you sort of try and work it out as a hip-hop DJ on it and things like that. Was your kind of interest in music, even at like that age, was you sort of dissecting music and working out how it was put together, and also sort of looking for breaks and loops and samples and stuff, even at, you know, in kind of more formative years?
Massively, yeah. Even when I got nicked Sergeant Pepper out of my dad's record collection, I was just obsessed with that drum break on the Sergeant Pepper track. You know, there's a little drum loop there. And I would just like play it over and over and over again, that one bit. So I knew that rhythm and beats and stuff was definitely my thing. And yeah, I remember getting Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet on tape. And when that came out, dragging my mum to Our Price to get it because it'd been on a skateboard video or something, one of the tracks. And I just remember being really mind blown by the production. I didn't know what production was, or, you know, and there's one bit on one of the tracks where it's like a Jimi Hendrix guitar solo looped. And in my head, Public Enemy had a guy playing that loop over and over again in the studio, yeah. You know, like, perfectly. I didn't quite know because I didn't understand sampling and stuff. But yeah, I remember just lying in bed with my headphones on, listening to Fear of a Black Planet and dissecting the layers and being obsessed with how they did it. And it just seemed like alchemy to me, like, it just seemed like how on earth did they do it? You know, well, that Bomb Squad production stuff was, but weirdly kind of similar to the Beatles. You know, there's a sort of parallel between Bomb Squad production and something like Strawberry Fields, because it's drum heavy, it's got tape loops, it's about textures and layers. And that's all the things I was really into. So obviously hip hop was just perfect for me, you know. Yeah. Had all that going on in it. So I remember my brother having an Emu sampler and like showing me how that worked, and that kind of blowing my mind. And that sort of taking that, you know, the beat juggling thing to the next level of sampling things on a MIDI keyboard. Yeah, it was exciting times, really. And I guess it was before computers, really. Like, no one had a computer unless you had an Apple or an Atari or an Amiga. Some people were making, I remember there was a band in Dundee called Void Kampf that were making electro, and I think they did all that on an Amiga.
Yeah.
But that, in a way, that was great because you didn't see the screen, so you weren't bogged down by that. You were just listening and using four tracks and stuff. But yeah, basically, it goes back a long way, that kind of obsession of how records are put together.
Yeah. For track four, I'm going to ask you the first record you remember buying from a record store. So we've spoke Beatles, Beasties, Public Enemy and Beck. This one shouldn't be very cool, I hope.
It's not cool at all. It's, it's Bart Simpson, Do the Bartman. yeah, I mean, just being a kid, being obsessed with The Simpsons. And I remember, like, kids would come into school and that had Sky TV, which was mind-blowing. That, you know, someone had Sky TV and they were like, oh, there's this cartoon, The Simpsons, and it's really funny and it's not like a cartoon. It's like for adults. And I was so intrigued, and sooner or later we sort of became a bit obsessed with it. And yeah, Do the Bartman came out, and I don't know what age I was, like 9 or something, 8 or 9. And I just loved it, and I knew all the lyrics. And I remember my neighbour's mum going over, taking us over to Woolworths, and they had all the singles up behind the counter, and getting Do the Bartman on 7-inch, and just that day just playing it over and over and over again. And me and my mates just rapping along to it. I mean, brilliant. Just loved it. But yeah, that was it. Just like, we would just, I was guess it was 7-inch singles at the time. You would just get what was cool that week, you know, in the charts. So I had all these mad 7-inch singles. Like me and my brother, it was so, you know, you'd have like Starship, The Final Countdown, and all these cheesy 80s records. And then, you know, you might have a cool one like Mars Pump Up the Volume, or...
yeah.
Because it was always about what the big brothers and sisters were in the town as well, wasn't it? So
always.
You might, you know, discover De La Soul or something that's edgy.
Yeah.
And then, or they might take the piss out you having Do the Bartman, and you're like, oh, right, yeah. You know, you realise that wasn't a great choice.
So aside from, like, older brothers' records and that, like, growing up, like, was there records on at home? Did your folks have records on?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of, like, folk records and that kind of new wave 70s folk, Pentangle and stuff like that. Tons of Beatles, hence sort of being a Beatles obsessive back then. Pink Floyd. Yeah. A bit of an eclectic mix. And yeah, we would definitely go and pillage things, you know, because it wasn't often that you'd get to buy an album or whatever, so you'd have to make do with what was kicking about, really. So you'd get really into Pink Floyd or whatever was on the shelf, you know.
And in regards to record shops, like, I guess, you know, as you got older, and certainly as a, you know, as an independent, you know, band as well, how important a record shop's been for you?
Massive. I mean, just obsessed. There was a few good record shops in Dundee. There was two Dance Specialists, 23rd Precinct and Equinox, where you could go and get like brand new Jungle dub plates or whatever. A bit of a kind of black market records vibe where you had to battle your way to the front of the shop. And yeah, we were quite into like industrial techno and stuff for a while. So we'd be buying like Lenny D and that. Yeah, just brilliant. And then there was one called Groucho's that was more secondhand stuff and albums and stuff like that. So yeah, most of my Saturday was spent in record shops, going between record shops.
Gravitate towards them when you're on tour, if there's you know, once you've done your sound check, you go and find a record shop.
massively straight away. And especially in America, because every town or small city has a ton of record shops and they're just killer as well. You know, you'll come back with stuff that you never knew existed or isn't even on Discogs, or, you know, just mad stuff out there.
Yeah.
So I usually try and take an empty suitcase when I go to tour America and then come back with a ton of stuff. But yeah, still a massive deal to me. And just, I guess, just seeing it as part of the job as well, because so much of our music is based around sampling that you're always looking for the next thing.
Of course.
Yeah.
For track five, I'm going to ask you, Dave, the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
I think I said a few. I think I said The Prodigy, No Good.
Mm-hmm.
Force Mass Motion, Panic.
Mm-hmm.
And Zero B, The Lockup.
You did.
They just were the first things that came into my head. I remember Zero B, The Lockup being a massive record with me and my mates. And it was that thing about it being, it was our sort of segue into house music, which when you're into rave and hardcore and industrial techno and stuff, house music seems like, it seemed to us like a bit boring or something.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't quite get it. I just wanted everything really fast and squeaky, you know, when I was in hardcore. And I think Zero B, The Lockup was our segue into kind of, I mean, listening to it now, it's still way faster than house music at play, probably. But it sort of got me into it. It was my gateway into like Strictly Rhythm and stuff like that. Because I think in the record shop in 23rd Precinct, they were a bit like, well, if you like that, you might like this, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And getting me to buy stuff that, because they didn't really like me coming in demanding to play Lenny D records on a Saturday afternoon. These were like old soul boys that were into like really good house music and DJing at the Rumba Club and stuff. And the last thing they want to hear is do 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 some Gabba record. So they started saying, well, how about this? You know, and I remember them selling me Armin van Helden, The Witch Doctor, because it was very drum heavy. And I was like, yeah, wow, I can get in the house. Anyway, blabbing on. But that was that record. Force Mass Motion, The Panic. That was on a great label called Rabbit City Records that did kind of faster techno and stuff. But that record, Panic, was played by all the DJs in Scotland at the time. It just summed up that bouncy Scottish techno that people loved at the time in 1993. And then The Prodigy, No Good, I guess it just, The Prodigy were really my main gateway into rave music when Prodigy Experience came out. I think at the time I was really into Ned's Atomic Dustbin and Nirvana and stuff, and then my eyes were open to rave music and rave culture through The Prodigy. Yeah.
I think it should definitely be, you know, never overlooked that at that point, when you look at, I mean, I was DJing in, you know, in clubs playing Nirvana and Ned's Atomic Dustbin then. And there wasn't huge amounts of electronic music being played in them clubs because there was such an explosion of guitar music in, you know, in the early 90s. There was very little. You know, you'd still get Depeche Mode and some of the sort of Nitzareb and industrial stuff would still make it through the, you know, the onto the dance floor. But it felt quite divided from what was going on pirate radio and you know, and the rave clubs, especially in Essex, because Essex, obviously home of the Prodigy as well, and the M25 raves, you know, that were going on around where we live were phenomenal. Uh-huh. But when Prodigy dropped Experience, and I guess it was probably, you know, maybe not so much Charlie, but when Outer Space dropped and Wind It Up, they were being played in rock clubs.
Yeah.
And it was like, hang on a minute, like, it's all right to like this one. Yeah, and it was quite strange that then obviously then went on to you know, Chemical Brothers and Utah Saints and Underworld and things like that, was that all sort of, you know, merged the indie clubs into becoming something way more interesting. But it was definitely Outer Space was that record that kind of brought the rave to the rock.
And, totally.
And then I think I love talking about Prodigy because they're our homegrown heroes and they're fucking incredible.
Yes.
But then to look at what they then done to then take the rave to fucking rock festivals, mm-hmm. you know, metal festivals. And it's like, yeah. And they deliver something equally as hard as what System of a Down or the Deftones can do. And it's, mm-hmm. I just think they're just, yeah, absolutely just a vital band for me. And I think they've just, the impact that they've had on, you know, what they've done for electronic music, it should never be overlooked.
Oh, massive. And it was exactly the same for me, where you had to be into Nirvana and Ned's Atomic Dustbin and stuff. And then when the Prodigy, Prodigy Experience came out, yeah, it was definitely like accepted by all those people and skaters and stuff that up until then saw rave as something nasty. You know, suddenly it was part of that and it was cool, you know.
It's twice you've mentioned skaters and skate videos, which is something that really interests me, because some of the skate videos that got handed around on VHS when I was at school and college, they were key places to find out about new bands. Was that the case for you?
Massively, yeah. And going back to talking about the Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet, it was a skate video called Attack, and it was this weird collage, because I loved all the art between the skating clips, because they were quite creative with all that. And it was this weird like laughing clown or something in this video, and it had a beat, and I remember saying to my mate, I wonder what that music is. And he said, it's Public Enemy. And so, yeah, that's why I went and got... And in fact, it wasn't Public Enemy, it was Bomb the Bass.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was close enough. But yeah, that's how... Because obviously there was no internet or Shazam or whatever. Everything was so word of mouth. Yeah. I remember seeing De La Soul graffitied on my street on a bin and was like, that's cool. Yeah. You know, finding out what De La Soul was.
Yeah.
You just, how did you find out about music? I guess there was magazines and stuff, but it was very word of mouth, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know one ever sprayed Ned's Atomic Dustbin on a dustbin. That would have been way cooler.
Well, I had the logo painted with Tippex on my school bag. I think I liked the logo more than the band, actually, to be honest. But
what was that, like the Godfather one in the...
Yeah, it was like a slime
wheel
thing, I think.
Yeah.
The atomic sign.
Great name for a band, man.
Really good. But I guess, you know, already there was dance beats coming in indie records, wasn't there? You know, there was the Madchester thing and all that.
Mm.
So whether you knew it or not, these guys were influenced by Mantronic. So, you know, American hip-hop and dance music, and then the Prodigy just kind of sealed the deal, didn't they? They just kicked the door for that record.
Because obviously, you know, going back a few years before that, you know, all the Weatherall remixes and the Terry Farley remixes were all being rinsed in the indie clubs, of course.
Right,
and I guess maybe I'm overlooking bands like 808 State as well that were, you know, the whole Manchester scene did throw a lot of stuff like that into the indie clubs as well.
Yeah.
You just throw a bit of Curtis Mantronic's production on anything. Oh, my God.
Like, yeah.
What a man. Track six, let's take you home. A favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Yeah, well, I picked the Beta Band, obviously, because I think growing up having a brother in a band was like such a blessing, you know, because I got to see the kind of inner workings of the music industry and how you put a record together. I got to see their kind of DIY aesthetic, which made me confident that I could go and make an album. The tracks I picked from them, I think, are To You Alone and Push It Out.
Yeah.
To You Alone was like a standalone single that's still one of my favourite tracks they did. And Push It Out's from the three EPs. And I remember he would give me tapes of their demo sessions and see, what do you think? And I remember hearing Push It Out and going back and going, Push It Out's amazing. And he was like, oh, right, yeah. He hadn't really got into it. But, you know, just getting those tapes, demo tapes and stuff was so exciting.
That's so cool.
Me and him had been sort of DJing, learning how to DJ and record collecting for a long time before that. It was just kind of the next thing to do, really.
Yeah.
Was start a band and get into, and more than that, like start getting into production, I think. And how can you take messing around with making hip hop loops and stuff at home to start working with songwriters and turn them into songs? And, you know, seeing that process definitely was so exciting. Because going back to talking about hip hop and the Beatles and stuff, it was like that for me. It was like taking loops and then just putting this great song over the top was like quite a buzz. That was definitely a huge influential time for me when all that started.
I asked you about confidence earlier and then, you know, you were blessed with such an opportunity to get an insight into, as you said, the industry and what the Beta Band are doing. But make no mistake, it's still a very difficult industry to have the success that you've had. You know, that's not an easy thing to do. Are you driven as a human?
Yeah, definitely driven and confident with music, just because I've got a lot of ideas and I find old sketchbooks and stuff now that have song ideas from when I was at school, and I'm still sort of trying to finish them. And that's like from 1996 or something. So I'm confident that I've got all the ideas. I procrastinate a lot, and that's why I've got ideas from 1996 still lying around. But I'm confident that those ideas could be good, or that they should exist in the world. I think if I didn't have the ideas and I was just forcing it, I would be lost a bit. But
yeah,
I think when you have an idea, when it pops in your head, you do have a drive to get it out into the world, or it'll just kind of nag away at you. And maybe that's it more. I don't like things nagging away at me. I'd rather get them out and people go, oh my God, this is terrible, than never get them out.
Absolutely. Well, you get to DJ now for track seven, a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Many may not know. Oh, many may not know that I like, was it?
Yeah.
I think I put a guilty pleasure.
You did.
Pussycat Dolls, Don't You?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tune,
like
mate.
It. I don't know. It's just, I just like it. It's just something about the production and the trumpets, the sort of trumpet sample. I think if you took away all the singing, that ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding is just great. And I think that's something about pop music that people don't give enough credit to producers that make these kind of records, that there's quite a lot of experimentation and weird stuff going on in a lot of them. Yeah. And I don't just mean like the obvious stuff like Neptunes, who obviously nailed it, you know, doing the perfect weird hip hop pop records. Mm. But there's something in a lot of songs I hear on the radio that, you know, just I'm listening back to the Spice Girls stuff, and I'm like, ah, that's good what they did there. And at the time, I just hated it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of cool stuff going on in there. And that's because I guess the producers knew what they were doing. Maybe
they're from
a hip hop DJ background. You never know, you know, who these guys are. But also, I think that Pussycat Dolls sort of reminds me of nights out in Dundee, going to like really cheesy clubs and having a great night, you know. Because I guess a lot of the nights out we had back then weren't just, I mean, Dundee was great for, I could go and see DJ Cam or, you know, or Jerry the Damager might be in town. Or everybody went through there and did gigs in the 90s. But also there was a lot of just high street cheesy clubs that we decided to go to instead, because it was a really good laugh.
Yeah.
And you'd see more of your mates from school there, really.
Yeah.
And sometimes just had a better night at these kind of clubs. And yeah, I remember that, just always being on and dancing around with your mates from school, having fun.
Well, Dave, you put together a Spotify playlist to accompany this episode, so it'll have all the tunes on there that you chose and some of the other ones that we spoke about as well. As we find ourselves coming to the end of a very bonkers year, what are you looking forward to for the rest of this year and next year? And what are you doing professionally as well?
I think I'm looking forward to getting back up to Scotland and managing to see family and stuff, because it's, I guess for a lot of people, spending time with family has been so tricky this year. And yeah, just looking forward to having the time to get ideas, as I say, that I've been kicking around since school.
Yeah.
Those kind of things finally out. And, you know, I did my own solo thing this year under the Hugo Paris alias, which was a house record with a Roland Clark vocal, and that stuff like that, that I've wanted to do for about 15 years and just never, well, especially since we put out the first Django single, it was just like a bit of a mad time. So never really. And that, as I was saying earlier, that is the good thing about all the lockdowns and all that for me, is that time to stop and reflect and do things that you've been putting off for a long time. So doing more of that, and then, as I say, just getting back out with Django Django to play festivals, which we're all missing very badly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dave, it's been a real pleasure talking records with you, and best of luck with what you've got coming up. And it's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Wicked. Ace, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Great chat. Got to talk about all of my favourite bands on there as well. Everyone likes to hear about Chuck D, you know, Fatboy Slim, De La Soul, Beck. Just some wonderful bands chosen there by Dave. Go and check out New Django. Go check out New Django Music. Even less. It's easy for me to say. Go and check them out. Get behind them. And yeah, and thank you. Just thank you for listening. And I mentioned it at the beginning, just really appreciate it, because I'm having loads of fun recording these pod chats with, you know, people that I'm completely in awe of. And yeah, learning slowly how to control my fanboy when I get to sit in front of these kind of creative geniuses that you know, blow my mind. I'm done. On to the next episode. Go and subscribe and go and have a look in the archives if this is your first time listening, and go and see which other chats you're interested in having listened to. Thanks for listening to this one. Thanks again to Dave, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out, because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year, and they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands, alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast. On the Distraction Pieces Network, with me, Stu Whippin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.